Morning, ladies and gentlemen. First case for argument, the United Retired Pilots versus United Airlines, Mr. Carrillo.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. The one group, the retired pilots, who will lose the most from the termination of United's pension plans was the only group not represented during the Section 1113 negotiations. In November 2004, United filed its Section 1113 motion to modify its collective bargaining agreements, CBAs, for the express purpose of removing any, and I'll use their words, impediment within the CBAs to termination of the pension plans. 1113 negotiations soon began. And since a prime focus of those negotiations was on the pension plans, all of the various unions represented their respective active and retired employees during the negotiations, all except ALPA, the Airline Pilots Association, who does not represent the older retired pilots and who just represents the younger active pilots.
How many pilots do you represent?
The organization, Your Honor, that I represent comprises of over 3,000 retired pilots. It's more than half of the retired pilot population.
And what exactly? I was unclear from your brief. What are you seeking by way of a remedy? Are you seeking money from United, or if so, how much, or further proceedings, or what?
What we're seeking is that 1113 be complied with. That since the retired pilots were not represented during the negotiations that led to what we call the ALPA agreement, which provided for replacement benefits for pensions, that an authorized representative be appointed for the retired pilots, that we conduct negotiations with United regarding the matter, and that if under 1113 we cannot reach an agreement, that the court, the bankruptcy court, can then determine whether the modifications to the pension plans are necessary, words used by 1113, to the reorganization of United, and can make a decision about what is appropriate so that we are not shut out of the process. I'll also add, Your Honor.
So you want an 1113 hearing before the bankruptcy judge?
If we cannot resolve it.
Right.
I would hope we could reach common ground with them, and it would materially advance this overall litigation. We have a number of issues going on with United Airlines. We may also have issues with ALPA, and
now,
this could resolve
it. The ALPA, according to the briefs, got something called replacement benefits. I don't know, maybe worth $500 million. I don't know if that's a real number. So how many of the active pilots are there, the active employee?
I do not know the
you
exact.
You said 3,000 retired, and
oh,
so how many are the are active, still flying?
I don't know the exact number of active pilots who are flying, Your Honor. I don't have that number.
But so would it be fair to say you would be seeking in effect a chunk of the $500 million, or something on top of that, or
I believe they've made their agreement. And in fact, they've already gone ahead and distributed money to the active pilots.
So the termination by the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, that didn't take away any of the replacement benefits. Is that what you're saying?
No, it does not affect their agreement at all.
Would it reopen? If you got the 1113 hearing you wanted, could that reopen the issue of replacement benefits?
It would, just with respect to the retired pilots, what would be appropriate for them?
Right, but the active and the, of course, the airline would be parties to this 1113 hearing.
Of course they would. And here's the distinction.
So wouldn't an option for the bankruptcy, maybe not legal, you tell me, would it be an option for the bankruptcy judge rather than require United to pay more to the retired pilots, to transfer some of those replacement benefits from the active to the retired?
That would be an option that the bankruptcy court could consider, Your Honor. Of course, I'll make a distinction here because you brought up the PBGC. The PBGC's focus, and there's termination litigation going on with them, is on what's called the qualified component of the plan. What the PBGC insures in this plan, there is a non-qualified component to this pension plan that the PBGC has no stake in and no interest in. That plan pays the retired pilots, all the retired pilots who are in it, approximately $6 million a month.
And it's $6 million a month.
And with respect to that discrete sum, we would certainly be looking to negotiate that item with United and to see what we can do to find some common ground. And that amount of money in the big picture of United Airlines is not a huge amount, and their bankruptcy plan, which is underway, can certainly continue.
You're saying the PBGC termination doesn't affect the non-qualified?
Not at all.
Now, by non-qualified, this means after-tax money? Is that what it is?
It's non-tax qualified. The company does not take a deduction for it, so that's why it's called non-tax qualified. The retired pilots who receive this pay taxes on it.
Is it part of the plan that's referred to in the collective bargaining agreement?
It is part of the plan referred to. And here's another point I want to make, Your Honor, is when you're talking about retired pilots, you're really not just talking about one collective bargaining agreement, because the way it works, we have pilots who retired under the 1995 collective bargaining agreement, year 2000 CBA. Their retirement benefits are fixed as of those agreements. And if a subsequent agreement gives those retired pilots greater pension benefits, it doesn't matter to the ones who retired earlier. They're going to get what is contained within their agreement. Company cannot unilaterally change those obligations, but the only exception has been in bankruptcy under Section 1113. And what you really need to do is roll all those employees into one proceeding and look to see, is there an authorized representative for them?
Let me ask you this, because one of the things that I've been curious about is why you didn't move for a stay of the consummation of the reorganization plan.
Because, Your Honor, we don't want to frustrate United Airlines from going forward. And I don't believe it's necessary, Your Honor. This is an issue that can be resolved. The bankruptcy process and the claim process going on right now with Judge Weedoff is ongoing. It's going to be happening for a long period of time. As I mentioned before, the PBGC action is separate. As to this non-qualified plan, this $6 million a month obligation, we can certainly handle it now, not disturb United's ongoing operations, deal with it, negotiate it, and have Judge Weedoff make a decision if we can't reach an agreement on it. And that can be done quickly.
All right. And then my other question really focuses on the 1113 process, and I want to hear more, and I know you address this in your brief, but I'd like to hear more from you regarding United's position, you know, that after 1114 and Congress passed that, it really only authorized a representative to protect medical benefits. And so doesn't that, and that's their principal argument, doesn't that mean that Congress never intended to have let retirees have a representative under 1113?
Well, of the many things I disagree with, that's probably one of the premier ones, Your Honor. 1114 was a specific reaction to to what was called the LTV case, where a company called LTV in the middle of the night took away insurance benefits from retirees. Congress reacted swiftly to that with 1114 designed to hone in on insurance obligations for retirees. If you look at the legislative history of 1113 and 1114, you will see that there is nothing in there that took away from 1113 and the right to protect employees covered by collective bargaining agreements, including retired employees, because of all these different collective bargaining agreements that are rolled into the 1113 process. There was testimony taken at the 1114 hearings by Congress that demonstrated that said that if someone terminates retiree pension benefits, they're violating 1113. So they were not restricting 1113 by enacting special litigation on 1114. Not at all. And when you think about the situation we're in, and I don't believe that Congress thought that it was any less important for pensioners to have pension benefits that put food on their table as they would with insurance benefits. But when you think about what really happened here, the people who were in the room deciding the fate of the retired pilots who own over two-thirds of this pension plan were United, whose goal has been to shut them out whenever they can, ALPA, who doesn't represent them, whose goal has been to take whatever they can. The PBGC, as I mentioned before, has no interest in this process, especially with respect to this non-qualified plan. There was no one there to represent the retired pilots' interest. Had there been, we might have been able to negotiate something, and we wouldn't be here today, and we wouldn't be involved in a variety of other claims with United Airlines.
Now, the PGBC will be paying your people, right?
On the qualified component of the plan, the PBGC, if they are successful in terminating, have a guaranteed amount, similar to what the FDIC does with the banks. Well, that's if you're 65 years old. And here's the other ingredient that you need to take into account when you judge the fairness of this. Pilots have to retire when they're 60 years old. They have no choice in the matter. And as we know, when you're 60, you are not entitled to the retirement perks of people who, whether it's Social Security or the PBGC, the requirements that you would have if you retired at 65 or older. So, yes, Your Honor, the PBGC will be paying them something, but it'll be vastly reduced.
Now, if we reversed and you got your 1113 hearing and you got some additional money, would that then reduce the PBGC's obligation, or how would they connect?
I don't believe it would, Your Honor. The same way,
because the plan would still be terminated. So,
if
that's upheld,
we're really talking about right now. We're talking about what we can negotiate under 1113 and the collective bargaining agreements. If we were able to reach an overall agreement on the whole pension plan, then we could contact the PBGC to see what impact that would have there. If we confined ourselves to the non-qualified plan,
right, I understand.
We could do that okay. Separately.
Okay. You want to save your time?
I certainly do, Your Honor, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Greeley. Mr. Seligman?
May it please the Court, David Seligman on behalf of United. Your Honor, I wanted to focus on the question that you asked at the beginning. What's the remedy that the retired pilots are seeking? And they said that they wanted 1113 to be complied with. That's a fundamental error on the appellant's part here. Let's look at what 1113 requires. 1113 says that the debtor cannot reject a collective bargaining agreement unless they first negotiate with the union. It says the authorized representative of the employees in the Pittsburgh Plate Glass case, a Supreme Court case cited by appellants, says employees means employees, not retirees. You have to negotiate.
Well, you know, Pittsburgh Plate Glass is pre-ERISA, isn't it? Doesn't the Second Circuit Century Brass opinion interpret employees to include retired?
It doesn't, Your Honor. That opinion itself acknowledges that the ruling that it's issuing is beyond the it says we recognize that what we're saying is at odds with a literal reading of the text. But it implemented what called the workable
solution. Are you saying we would have to reject Century Brass?
Absolutely. And again,
really?
as
I don't know. Seemed pretty sensible. Well, I mean, after all, these retired people have a big interest. Why shouldn't they be heard?
The reason is, Your Honor, again, what is 1113 require? You have to negotiate with the union as a precondition to rejection. An 1113 hearing is a hearing to reject a collective bargaining agreement.
But
you have to do things.
But as you say, 1113 refers to employees, not the union.
Your Honor would.
And Century Brass says, you know, it ought to include the retired employees.
Well, even if Your Honor were.
Sensible. Is there some reason? Man, I don't want to seem too. Too much like a layperson, but is there some a practical reason why the retirees, I mean, according to Mr. Carrillo, they own two-thirds of the pension plan, or you know, they have two-thirds of the interest in the pension plan. They get wiped out without being heard.
Well,
is there a reason for that? I mean,
yes,
would they screw up the bankruptcy or something?
Yes, there is. There are several answers, and I just want to get back to that 1113 point, because the 1113 hearing.
Answer my question.
Okay, the answer to your question, Your Honor, is that the issue that the retired pilots are concerned about is termination of the pension plan. That is pursuant to a separate proceeding, and that's why the district court dismissed this appeal as interlocutory. There is a separate proceeding going on right now where the bankruptcy court has issued proposed findings and conclusions, finding that PBGC in an involuntary termination.
I understand PBGC can terminate the plan, but as according to Mr. Carrillo, the ALPA's $500 million or whatever it got in replacement benefits are not going down the drain with the termination, right? And so what they're saying, I don't think they care about the termination of the plan as such. I don't want to put words in Mr. Crilly's mouth. But if he had gotten some of that $500 million or had gotten $100 million on top for the retired people, then the plan could be terminated by PBGC, but they would have those benefits. So that's what they want. They want to have some benefits that are apart from the termination.
Your Honor, but that was
What's wrong with that?
Well, because first of all, it was about $550 million of notes given to the ALPA for its members, along with a bunch of securities, which have since been distributed and are not trading on the market, in return for wage concessions. The $500 million was not necessarily a new plan. It was notes that are issued. What Mr. Quigley wants is to intercept himself.
Well, they got it for the wage concessions, but presumably he also got it for the no-fight agreement, right?
That's correct.
So they gave up something. So if these people, the retirees, if they have some kind of rights to be heard, then that's a right that they would surrender in exchange for some money. So they'd get some money just like the active pilots. But why wouldn't that be the sensible
result? The point here is that they're claiming under Century Brass or whatever that they have rights under 1113. There was no 1113 hearing here. We withdrew our 1113 rejection motion because we had a consensual agreement. Everything that they're claiming, all the rights are.
Oddly, your consensual agreement is not an agreement to terminate the collective bargaining agreement.
That's correct.
It's a no-fight agreement.
That's correct. And, Your Honor, because there was no 1113
so what's
rejection
that?
Hearing.
I mean, I don't understand. You have an agreement which is not an agreement to terminate the collective bargaining agreement, and you say that agreement then enables you to bypass 1113?
There was no need for 1113.
Because there was no agreement to dissolve the collective bargaining agreement.
That's correct, but we could have reached a consensual agreement with ALPA to modify a collective bargaining agreement.
But you didn't. You just had a no-fight agreement.
Well, there was a whole host of various provisions in the ALPA agreement for wage concessions, new profit-sharing plans.
But all they gave up was that they wouldn't fight. They didn't agree to the dissolution of the agreement.
That's correct, Your Honor. And that's
so it's a strange kind of agreement.
I agree that it is, in a sense, strange. But
very
that's
strange. So why was it in that format?
The reason that it was in that form, Your Honor, is because at that particular time, remember, there's a two-step process to terminate a pension plan. You have to get rid of the contract bar with your union that requires a pension plan, and then you have to go through the second step, the ERISA pension termination.
Right, and you never did the first step.
Well, we did the first step.
No, you didn't.
Because we eliminated the contract bar.
Because you just had a no-fight agreement.
Well, that's all you need is for the union to agree. That's all you need is for the union to agree that they're not going to contest, as a contractual matter, the termination of the pension plan, but it still requires the second step to be taken.
But that second step wasn't taken either.
Well, because what happened was in the interim, the PBGC came in.
No, but that's different. What the PBGC does is fine. Let's assume that's upheld on appeal, you know, eventually, and so the plan is terminated. But the fact is that these retired people never got a chance to say they should get some of these notes or securities or something, because they have a right to be heard and they will sell that right to be heard, just the way the ALPA people sold their right.
Well, the other point...
They're not entitled, because they're not giving up... They're not making wage concessions since they're retired, so maybe they're entitled to much less than your people. That would be...
Well, this court already held in a previous appeal, the independent fiduciary appeal back in May of last year, that the only parties who are able to have standing to participate
right.
Is the union and the debtor.
I mean, there's language in IFS to help you. I agree with that. But the actual holding is that IFS was not a fiduciary, so it had no business being there. That's a separate issue from whether these people are entitled to have some kind of representation in the initial negotiations.
Well, again, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree because it's...
And, of course, there's no reference in IFS to the Century Brass case, right? You wouldn't want to think that we had, you know, without citing a case, had rejected it, right? That wouldn't be good judicial practice.
I'm not suggesting that that this court had considered Century Brass at that point. But what I am suggesting is that there's two things here. One, there's our disagreement on Century Brass, that we don't think that it should be upheld. Congress had the opportunity to come in and to weigh in on whether retirees have the right to an authorized representative under 1113. They didn't do that. They only gave authorized representations for retiree medical. But again, this court...
And then what's your response then to what counsel says? But that was a very narrow response that Congress had. They weren't looking at the whole bailiwick. It was just looking at those kinds of benefits.
I wouldn't necessarily agree because Century Brass had been enacted... Before 1113 was enacted, so we can presume that Congress considered
We can presume that Congress knew about Century Brass, even if it didn't mention it, and thought Century Brass was something it had to push out of the way. That's pretty artificial, isn't it?
Well, obviously, there's always legislative history that can be interpreted either way, but that would be our position. But
the legislative history doesn't discuss Century Brass.
You're right, and it also doesn't suggest.
I mean, you know, the federal courts decide 20,000 cases a year, so you can't expect Congress to be up on all of them, even the ones that bear on a particular issue.
Yes.
But look, what is it exactly you're worried about? I mean, you say this $500 million, I don't know whether it was really worth that. The replacement benefits were in exchange for two things, for ALPA's not fighting you and for wage concessions, and they made. That's fine. Presumably, the bulk of that money is for the wage concessions. That's very valuable. Now, these people, the retirees, they can't make wage concessions anymore. So presumably, if there were these negotiations, they were part of them and so on, they wouldn't be entitled to, they mightn't be entitled to all that much, right? We don't know how much.
Well, Your Honor.
So how do we know this would really interfere significantly with United's emergence from bankruptcy?
Because if this court were to say that instead of this being a two-party deal, this had to be a three-party deal, the whole nature of the agreement could change, and it could change
it
significantly.
It could, but probably it wouldn't, right?
Well, Your Honor, and that was the point of our motion to dismiss here, is that there's lots of things that have happened in this case based upon the plan of reorganization.
It's purely speculative to think that admitting them to that negotiation would wreck the
Well, Your Honor, I would venture to guess that if they had a seat at the table, they would be asking for, one, these non-qualified benefits, $72 million a year, but they'd be also be asking for something in consideration for qualified pension
plan. They can ask for the moon, but the bankruptcy judge won't give it to them, right?
Well, but it's not for the bankruptcy court to remember. You had also asked the question of whether the bankruptcy court can just move some of the consideration. The bankruptcy court can't do that. An 1113 rejection trial, if there's going to be one, the bankruptcy court gives a thumbs up or a thumbs down. It either says that the collective bargaining agreement remains in place because the debtors haven't proved that a necessity to reject it, or it's completely eliminated and both parties operate as if there was a CBA in the first place, you know, and there's been a CBA in place with the pilots for 50-some-odd years.
If the retired people ask for the moon, then they're going to lose, right? So they won't ask for the moon.
That is correct.
So what's the problem?
Well, again, the problem is...
What if they just get their $72 million a year, right? That's not going to affect the bankruptcy.
Well, but somebody
can't
could always
get that much, right? I mean, that would be the minute. That would be the floor. So if they got their $72 million. That's not going to wreck your bankruptcy.
What the retired pilot set up is a straw man. We're not suggesting that if that happens, the fleet's going to be grounded tomorrow. What we are suggesting is that thousands of people voted on this plan of reorganization. It was implemented
But several thousand people who were deeply affected. I mean, really seriously affected in terms of their retirement, did not have a chance to say, well, you know, we ought to get something too.
But I would suggest, Your Honor, that there are 43,000 other employees of this company, as well as retirees who made concessions. And
right,
the
ones who make concessions, let's assume, I don't know if it's true, but let's assume they get the lion's share of the replacement benefits. That makes sense. Their concessions are being replaced by these securities, may not be worth a lot. But why shouldn't these people have a right at least to, you know, make their case for why they should get something?
Because
the $72 million seemed pretty reasonable, actually.
Because again, the structure of 1113 is not at issue here. They're claiming rights under 1113. If you look at Century Brass, and this is the way to distinguish that case, Century Brass involved a rejection of a collective bargaining agreement where the lower court approved the rejection because it said that there was no authorized representative of the retirees. Here, there was no rejection. In that case, the court said you needed 1113 to protect the retirees because there was an 1113 rejection trial. Here, there is no 1113 rejection trial because there was a consensual agreement.
Yeah, but there's a kind of shell game here in which somehow through a series of transactions, the retirees have no chance to make their position.
I would make two points on that. One, that is their beef with Congress. Number one.
That's your 1114 argument.
That's correct. And also, I would point to this court's affirmance of the United PBGC settlement, which was affirmed back in November this past year. In that same, that's a similar situation here. United was seeking to reject its collective bargaining agreement with the flight attendants, and then entered into a settlement with the PBGC. Nullifying the need to do an 1113 rejection because the PBG was going to come in and do an involuntary. And the flight attendants stood up here in front of this court and said, wait a second, you can't reach a settlement and pull back your 1113 rejection. And this court said, no, you can entirely pull back your 1113 rejection motion and proceed down another route and reach a settlement with a party. There's no reason once you start an 1113 rejection that you have to proceed with it. And that's the case here because 1113 is meant to foster negotiations with your union. And we were able to avoid a very contentious 1113 rejection hearing by reaching
Of course, if you cut out one of the parties to the pension benefit, of course that's going to facilitate your agreement with the remaining party.
Well, I would take issue with the phrase "cutting out" because right now the retired pilots have asserted claims for qualified and non-qualified benefits in the bankruptcy court. Those are being adjudicated now. We're not suggesting that they don't have whatever claims they're going to have in the bankruptcy case. We agree that they have non-qualified claims, and the dollar amount of those are being adjudicated right now by the bankruptcy court. So we're not suggesting that they don't have whatever claims or rights they have. Well, and that was the point for
What is the base of those claims?
Well, they have a unsecured non-qualified claim that they're asserting, and it's present valued in the aggregate of $500-600 million of an unsecured claim. And we agree that they have an unsecured claim. We're just dispute, there's a little actuarial dispute as to the dollar amount. They also previously sought a claim in the bankruptcy for their qualified benefits. And the court said, no, you don't get qualified benefit claim because that belongs to the PBGC. So they had an opportunity.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Sullivan.
Thank you.
Ms. Saccotti?
May it please the Court, Babette Saccotti for the Airline Pilots Association. I'd like to address a number of items arising from the last argument. Specifically, first, there's been a lot of characterizations here about, this group lost the most and didn't have a say. This is a bankruptcy case, Your Honors. There's a lot of loss to go around here. It's the nature of bankruptcy when you're dealing with any stakeholder constituency, particularly employees and retirees, and no one is denying that.
Are you recognizing them as a stakeholder constituency?
They have claims, Your Honor, to the extent they have claims.
But they weren't a stakeholder in your negotiations.
No, Your Honor, and that gets to my next point. The agreement that was reached, the narrow issue here today is, are there grounds to reverse the approval of the ALPA agreement based upon the fact that the retired pilots did not participate in the negotiation of the agreement? We believe that the answer to that is really unqualifiedly no, based on
very... What exactly is the agreement we're being asked to, that the judge approved? Is this the no-fight agreement?
No, Your Honor, this is a collective bargaining agreement. It is absolutely a collective bargaining agreement. I don't... quite understand what the court means by a no-fight agreement. It is a collective bargaining agreement.
When ALPA agreed not to oppose termination, isn't that
the agreement?
Isn't that the agreement that the judge approved?
The ALPA agreement contains a number of provisions that reflect further labor cost relief that United sought, and it addresses their proposal.
Was it an agreement to terminate the collective bargaining agreement?
No. And that, I think, again, is a misconception of the 1113 process. This was collective bargaining. Failing the reaching of a consensual agreement, the debtor had the right to go to court, prove up its proposal, including a proposal to eliminate the contractual obligation to maintain the plan. If that had happened, if there had been no consensual agreement and there had been a trial before the bankruptcy court, the remedy would have been rejection to the extent of United's proposal. It is not a goal of 1113 or collective bargaining in this context to negotiate the termination of an agreement.
So in other words, the ALPA agreement doesn't depend on termination of the pilot plan?
No. The ALPA agreement has provisions in it because United said it was going to seek termination. So, yes, there were negotiations about pension subjects. That is a perfectly lawful thing for ALPA to have done, including in an 1113 context. And the Pittsburgh plate glass decision is relevant here, and Century Brass is...
Okay, but I'm lost now. So there was no 1113 determination terminating the pension plan, right?
There has been no...
Terminating the collective bargaining agreement.
No. It's not a function of 1113 to begin with. It is simply a statute that allows the debtor, absent a consensual agreement, meaning a collective bargaining agreement reached between the authorized representative, which is ALPA, and the carrier, which is United, to consensually agreed upon modifications. If that doesn't happen, United proves up its proposal, gets to prove it up in court, and gets... the authority to impose unilaterally those terms.
Okay,
there's
so we
nothing
know
about
there's no 1113 termination. We know that. So you're saying this agreement, which I'm calling a no-fight agreement, you're saying this is an agreement to modify the collective bargaining agreement by terminating the pension
plan? No, there is no provision in this agreement to terminate the pension plan. The pension plan can only be terminated pursuant to ERISA, and there are two provisions that allow that, and this plan is in the process, or was, and now may be terminated pursuant to ERISA, Section 4042 of ERISA, having nothing to do even with the section that the letter
right,
of agreement had to do with. Nothing about the letter of agreement took away any ability of the retired pilots to be heard with respect to the plan termination, and even to be heard with respect to the elimination, if that happens, of non-qualified benefit.
Look, that's not what they're complaining about. They're not complaining that they don't have a chance to fight over the PBGC termination. What they're saying is you people, the active pilots, walked away with $500 million in replacement benefits, probably not worth that, but some quantity of replacement benefits, and they didn't have any chance to be heard in those to participate in the negotiations. They might have gotten something. Now, what is it that I don't understand how what you've been saying joins issue with that argument, right? So it's basically a century brass argument. These people are deeply interested in what happens to the pension plan, which you obviously don't represent their interests, neither does United. So, you know, they're out in the cold. They don't get to be heard. What is it in the law that blocks that? That's what I'm.
Well, there are several things. First of all, under the Railway Labor Act, United is under an affirmative obligation to treat and collectively bargain only with the certified representative, and that is ALPA. So they are under an affirmative duty to treat with no other with respect to collective bargaining. With respect to claims, if the retired pilots and United want to deal with their non-qualified claims, the letter of agreement says nothing about that. ALPA says nothing about that. Nothing stands in their way with respect to do that. But there are very specific and long-standing.
You're saying the Railway Labor Act?
The Railway Labor
Act. Is your answer to your Railway Labor Act?
The Railway
Labor
Act.
Is your answer to their argument?
Yes, of course, because the Railway Labor Act is the labor law construct under which collective bargaining takes place in the airline industry. They are under an affirmative duty to treat only with ALPA. Century Brass is an artifact of history. It belongs on the dustbin,
frankly.
What a cruel
thing to say to the Second Circuit. It's an artifact of history.
It is, Your Honor, because it was enacted before Section 1114.
It's history.
It is
history. Your 1114 argument. That's or Mr. Seligman's.
Well, it is we submit a very good argument because when Congress speaks with respect to the Bankruptcy Code in particular and carves out rights, the courts have traditionally been very narrowly constructive of those rights.
Did you discuss the Railway Labor Act in your brief?
Excuse me? Yes, we do. We've cited the Virginian Railway case. We've cited the IAM case and a third case. And this is, we're talking about 75 years of Railway Labor Act history here.
The let me just get back to 1114. In that statute, it defined retiree benefits, didn't it?
Yes, as health benefits. Correct. That's correct. And there is a statement, at least one statement in the legislative history, Senator Metzenbaum said, that nothing about 1114 disrupts or changes the current law with respect to pension benefits. So it's not as if they didn't think about it. And in fact, if you look at 1114, Congress constructed a statute, even though Century Brass arose in the collectively bargained context, Section 1114 deals with non-collectively bargained retiree health as well. So it cannot have been a matter of sheer inadvertence or oversight that Congress just didn't think about pension benefits and just left Section 1113 to subsume anything that really wasn't covered by 1114. The enactment of 1114 must be considered to have been deliberate, and therefore, and the 1113 and 1114 have been compared in this way in other instances as well. 1113 does not allow for the type of a selection process for 1114 allows for, and that really must be considered deliberative. Once again.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Sicotti. Your time has expired. Mr. Carrillo, how much time does he have? 2 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of quick points. Wage concessions are not part of this $550 million.
Really?
They have a claim for that in the bankruptcy court that they're receiving. If you look at the ALPA agreement that we're asking you to review, it is that $550 is keyed in solely to termination of the pension plan. Their benefits for that. Your Honor called it a shell game when they said, well, this ALPA agreement really has nothing to do with 1113. I would agree with that, maybe even call 1113 the sword of Damocles that was hanging over everyone's head to drive that agreement. That agreement has been enforced by the bankruptcy court pursuant to 1113. So for them to say that the agreement has nothing to do with 1113 is not right. It does. We didn't get any right to negotiate these replacement benefits, and then because they reached an agreement, which is what 1113 is designed to foster, We didn't get any right of hearing before the bankruptcy court to be heard as to what we should seek. And the Senator Metzenbaum comment on 1114 is not complete. Senator Metzenbaum referred to Section 1113 and said, referring to that statute, said, it was never intended that the Bankruptcy Act would be used for the purpose of terminating the rights of the retirees without a court order. That's 1113. It protects pension benefits of retirees. The past collective bargaining agreements, which entitled these retirees to their pension benefits, cannot be unilaterally terminated or cannot be terminated by someone like ALPA who doesn't represent the retirees. Please reverse this order and allow 1113 to work the way it should. I promise we're not going to ask for the moon. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much to all counsel. And we'll move on to our next case.